Hi all, and welcome to this lecture where I talk about digital advertising. This is the positioning of the lecture to the course framework. So again, we are in part two, operational activities of digital marketing, and within the MRACE model, we are especially talking about the reach and activate stages when we talk about digital advertising. So by large, when we do digital advertising, we want to reach new target audiences, sometimes already audiences that are familiar with our brand, but it's a lot about reaching them and sometimes also activating them, especially when we talk about retargeted ads. So it's not just reaching, but there might be people who have visited our website and they've been looking at certain products so we can try to activate them again if they haven't bought the products yet. But definitely, mainly we're talking about the reach and act. You can always use digital advertising in other stages, but these are definitely the key stages where digital advertising belongs to. Here are the learning goals. So after this lecture, a student should be able to, first of all, distinguish and define different digital advertising types. And then secondly, plan digital advertising campaigns. And I will start with the digital advertising types. And to begin with, a little bit of a background regarding digital advertising industry. So on the left-hand side, you can see digital ad spending worldwide between 23 and 28. So obviously, some of these years are estimates. The data comes from 24. On the black columns, you can see the digital ad spending overall. So this is marked with billions. So 603 billions or 2024. 676 billions. It's first of all, it's a huge industry and it's expected to grow even more in the coming years. Maybe more interestingly, on the blue line, you can see the share of digital ad spending of total ad spending. So 24, it's about 70%, meaning that 70% of the advertisers advertising spend goes to digital formats. So digital advertising in the last 5 to 10 years has become the dominant advertising type. So it is no longer so that most money goes to TV and radio and these mass media channels, but instead the majority of ad spending goes to digital formats. And that's why it's a very important topic as part of digital marketing to realize. On the red line, you can see the expected changes in the digital ad spend, and you can see that the growth is slowing down, which is quite logical given that digital ad spending has probably it doesn't have it necessarily have not reached the saturation point, but at least you can see that the majority of ad spend goes to digital ads already. So the growth now mainly describes the general growth rate of advertising as a whole, as digital advertising is already the dominant ad format. And it's quite obvious from that angle. So it doesn't the growth is not driven by replacing conventional ads with digital ads so much anymore. So the growth rate used to be much bigger, but now we are, steadily slowing down. Yet it is expected that the share is still growing, but only gradually anymore. In the middle, you can see US ad spending on select media formats and channels in 24. It is US data, but generally it reflects also at least the Western Hemisphere quite well. So whether it is US ad spending or Europe ad spending, we can see the same trend. So by large, the digital ad spend goes to search ads and then social network advertising. So most of the ads we can see belong to one of these two groups. And then there are obviously other channels. And considering the role of search and social network, it's quite understandable which companies dominate the market. And when it comes to digital advertising as an industry, it is not a monopoly, but it's definitely also not very competitive or fragmented industry. So Alphabet, better known as Google, dominates the market along with Meta, so they are quite even. And Alphabet's channels are obviously Google and YouTube, and then Meta, especially Facebook and Instagram. The third player in the field, according to at least this data set, is Amazon. And you can already see that Amazon is much smaller player in advertising compared to Meta and Alphabet. Then a lot of other companies follow. But maybe to sort of summarize or condense the idea, in the Western Hemisphere, especially Alphabet, Meta, and Amazon are dominant players. ByteDance, that owns, for example, TikTok, it's their main channel, has been growing very fast, and it's probably going to grow even further. So it's definitely one of these big growing channels. There are other Chinese players like Alibaba, Pinduoduo, which is affiliated with Temu, which is better known in the Western Hemisphere. Then comes Microsoft, Tencent, Kuaishou. So by and large, there are American players, and then we have Chinese players in the field, but especially the American Alphabet and Meta are leading the way. Search ads is perhaps the most typical advertising format in the digital world. And you can roughly divide search ads on Google. Obviously, all other search engines, or at least many other search engines, are serving ads just as well, but Google is the dominant player. So we have two main types of search ads. There are, subcategories for these, but we have the conventional search ads, and then we have the shopping ads. When you are Googling something that clearly indicates that you are interested in a product, it's quite common that you see these shopping ads, which are essentially product ads. And then if it's maybe something more informational, at least typically, then you see conventional search ads. So here I've Googled which marketing automation tool to select, which is clearly like an informational search. You may still see ads, and they are usually these conventional types. And this is just to show you where you can locate the ads in the Google search. So last time we talked about search engine optimization and these so-called unpaid or organic search results. So these are the ones that the companies are not paying for. But whenever I click this link here, Klaviyo's marketing automation software, then Klaviyo will pay a commission to Google. How much? Hard to tell. It really depends on many factors. But I'm going to talk about the pricing a little bit later on. But the ads are usually located on a top or then at the very bottom, often both. Now, how does Google determine which ads are shown and in which order on the search engine result page? Google uses the so-called ad rank system, and I want to tell that this is a little bit outdated idea of how it works. However, I think it's better to tell you how it roughly works than telling that it's a really complex system and there are many factors. So this is something like an original idea how the AdRank system worked, and now it has become more complex. However, I'm pretty sure that this still remains quite valid. So these are the very key factors, and then they have just added some other factors, such as location is and context are now important ad track factors, and then there are these ad extensions or ad assets that have influence. However, I'm quite confident to say that the max bid and quality score still dominate the ad rank system. So the ad rank is a simple calculation, in a sense, simple. Max bid multiplied by quality score. And the max bid is the maximum price you're willing to pay per click. So you can set a maximum bid. So this is the maximum money you're willing to pay per each click. So in this theoretical example, we have four advertisers. One is willing to pay $2 per click. One is willing to pay $4, $6, and $8 per click. So this is the one factor that affects which or how the ads are ranked and positioned against each other. The other, a little bit more complex issue is the quality score. And again, this is probably not just the most recent playbook how it works, but some years ago, Google published these three major components, and I do not see a reason why these would not be anymore the major components, but now they describe all of these things in a vague terms. So give it or take it. Expected click-through rate is for sure going to be very important for Google. So the likelihood that your ad will be clicked when shown. And for this, I'm sure they use AI. They can predict pretty well what kinds of ads are clicked and what types of ads are not clicked. So this is one component behind quality score. Second is obvious, it's ad relevance, how closely your ad matches the intent behind a user's search. So in simple terms, let's say I'm Googling a laptop, and then if your ad is about laptop, then it's probably quite relevant. But if I Google laptop and you have an ad for bicycles, then it's probably not going to be very relevant. So one of the key issues in search advertising is that you can select the types of keywords when you want your ad to be shown to make them more relevant. And thirdly, the landing page experience. So how relevant and useful your landing page is to people who click your ads. So they're sort of monitoring what happens after the click. Do the people bounce immediately? They also scan the landing page. They can estimate how well that landing page is structured. So I'm not sure if I've discussed landing pages before, but it's basically the page where a person lands after clicking the link. So where are you directing this consumer? So what is the page you're taking him or her? Now, if you think about the ad rank system, although outdated, this is now the very simple version of how to think about it. So you calculate the max bid 2 times 10, 4 times 4, 6 times 2, 8 times 1, and you get the ad rank score. So the first advertiser gets 20 points, and then the second 16, and so on. So this sort of determines the positioning of the different ads. So advertiser one wins the competition, and in this case, its ad would be the very first ad in the search engine result page. There are also things like threshold values. So I'm pretty sure that if your quality score is 2 or 1, probably even 4, your ad will not be shown at all. But let's keep this theoretical. So this is just how the ad rank system, but Google is pretty obsessed about the quality, and they don't want to show ads that have no relevance to the user query, because their mission is still to provide relevant search results. And then it's a little bit different thing to say, like, how much do they pay? What you need to understand, or at least what's easy to understand, is that it's not the amount that you're willing to pay that you will actually pay. So in theory, you need to pay the amount that is needed to keep the ad rank position. And again, it's quite simple math. So advertiser one in this case, although it is willing to pay $2 per click, it ends up paying $161. And the mathematics works here so that the second advertiser gets an ad rank score of 16. So 16 divided by the quality score of the advertiser one. So 16 divided by 10 plus 1 cent is 161. And you can double check it by replacing $2 with 161. So 161 times 10 would be 16.1. So it's just enough to beat advertiser two. And I'm sure it's not as simple as this, but these are some of the original ideas that Google announced a long time ago. And I believe the system still works, or at least resembles this, although it has become more complex. As said, if you're interested in how it works, here is a link. But I warn you that how they now present all of this is, slightly fake, and it's really hard to get anything as clear as they used to be able to inform. Besides search ads, display ads are some of the very dominant advertising formats in the digital environment. And as you know, there are many types of display ads. They might be just, text ads. They might be, visual ads with some pictures, for example. They might be videos. So note that the videos belong to this category of display ads. These videos can be shown on YouTube or in social networks, and in general, whatever types of ads you show, you can show them usually on websites, on applications, social media sites, and so on. Some of them might be animated, as you know, might be very annoying sometimes, so they sort of disturb you from doing what you would like to be doing, and so on. And yes, they can be mobile, they can be desktop, but this is probably not big news for anyone. When it comes to the display ad networks, then this is maybe something that at least not all of you are familiar with. So, how the ads are sort of served relates to these ad networks. Google, once again, is a dominant player in display ads as well, besides the social network platforms like Facebook and Instagram and so on. But when it comes to advertisements on websites and apps, Google is again a very, very strong player. Because Google has the largest display ad network, covering over 2 million websites that reach over 90% of internet users across the globe, at least according to the stories. So they have this so-called Google AdSense system. And how it works, it essentially connects the advertisers and publishers. And publishers, or by publishers, I mean the website owner and app owner. So if you have a website, you have an app, and you are willing to show ads against some commission paid by Google, then you can become part of these ad networks. This is how it roughly works. So, if you think about the advertising and the actors involved, they are advertisers who are willing to show ads. Then there are these publishers. So, for example, the website owners who are willing to show ads if they get a commission, of course. And then you have the internet users who are navigating the web. So the display network connects all these three, so advertisers, publishers, and the internet users. So if you're an advertiser, you can make bids to show ads with certain target criteria. So even in the display advertising, there is a similar bidding system as in the search ads. So again, you can set criteria how much you're willing to pay for showing your ads. And then there are the publishers who are willing to show ads with given commission. So display network is trying to connect the two. So for example, let's say I'm an internet user who is browsing the internet. I'm going to a news website, for example, and then there are a certain amount, a certain number of advertisers who are willing to show ads for me based on my profile criteria. So then the display network will, in milliseconds, basically connect all these two. So what's the publisher? Who are the advertisers who are sort of after me based on the target criteria, who are sort of willing to advertise to me in this particular website? And it connects all of those three. So this is roughly how the display advertising networks work. So it's no longer often so that if you have a website and then you make contracts with different brands or companies who are willing to show ads on your website, but rather you usually collaborate with these ad networks and then they will connect you with, thousands and thousands of different brands and companies who want to publish ads. And of course, the business logic goes so that if the advertiser pays $2, then this is very theoretical. So some of those dollars will go to the display network, so they take a commission, and then some of that money goes to the publisher. And then, of course, the advertisers hope that by showing these ads, the internet users would click the ads or some other way end up buying your products, and then they will get a lot of money. That's how the advertising system works. So hopefully this gives you an idea how the display networks work, but it's again quite a complex industry. Then something else, affiliate marketing, which I think should be called affiliate advertising because that's essentially what it is. And here is some sort of a definition. This is probably not a term that is familiar to everyone. So it's about earning a commission by promoting other people's or company's products. As a user, if you find a product you like, sorry, as an affiliate, you find a product you like, you promote it to the others and earn a piece of the profit for each sale that you make. So affiliate marketing is often called performance-based marketing. So it's a little different to what we just discussed about the search ads and display ads in general. Usually the monetization in the search ads is about the clicks, and often in display ads, it's about the impressions, so how many times they're shown to someone. But then in the affiliate marketing, it's based on the performance, so based on how much people actually purchase the products. And here is an example how it might work. So, for example, Zalando, Amazon, especially many of these big e-commerce players have these very broad affiliate programs. And again, if you're a publisher, so you own a website, app, blog, whatever it is, you can register to become a Zalando's affiliate. And then you can start showing Zalando's adverts. And whenever there's a customer clicks your ad and then goes to Zalando.com and purchases something, you get a commission, which I believe is somewhere around even 10%. The trouble is, of course, that not many people click any of those ads. So I believe this is very profitable business for these big e-commerce players, whoever have these successful affiliate programs. Perhaps affiliate marketing has become quite common in YouTube. So there are a lot of affiliates who are, for example, testing products and then, showing videos how to use the product and tell how amazing it is. And then there's usually the affiliate link if you click that and then purchase something, purchase the product that is being advertised by this affiliate program. Then again, the affiliate gets a commission. So perhaps, especially on YouTube, you find these types of arrangements quite often. Now, influencer marketing, kind of close to the affiliate marketing, but again, the monetization is different. The monetization is usually, well, it resembles more display advertising. Or actually, it's most commonly a little bit different again. So it's about a contract between the influencer and the brand or whoever the commissioner company is. So influencer marketing, basically, it's a collaboration between popular social media users and brands to promote brands' products or services. A very simple-minded definition, but that's what it usually is. So let's say here's an influencer, Sophie Allen. She has probably done a deal with Gymshark. And let's say Gymshark has agreed to pay a certain amount of money. Hard to tell how much, depends on the popularity of the influencer, quite much. Maybe they pay her 10,000 or 100,000, 1,000, who knows, for creating content. And there is usually a lot of collaboration what this content will be, but often the influencers get some freedom what kind of content they will deliver so that it fits to their programs. And usually these monetary terms have been prearranged. Maybe there might be some bonuses if they're can measure the outcome somehow, but usually it's just getting money by delivering content on social media. And we're going to talk about influencer marketing a little bit more later on in this course. But the idea for the advertisers is that they rent the audience of these influencers who tend to have this broad following and often quite engaged followership. So they have a good relationship with the followers, and then it's considered that the followers will listen better this influencer rather than paying attention to company ads. So it feels more personal, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later on. But yes, influencer marketing can be something else than just promoting products, but let's say it tends to be quite product focused, to be honest. So it's usually about a certain product or service. Native advertising might be a term that is not familiar for everyone, and what it means, it is a form of paid advertising in which the ads match the look, feel, and function of the media format where they appear. So this is particularly common in news websites. So if you go to any news website, you are very likely to see some native advertising. And what it practically means is that the advertisers are masking an ad into a news story. That's how it works in the news website. And basically, it's an ad, but it looks like a news story. Like we have here CNN and then Entrepreneur, some of these publishers who basically provide a lot of content, news, and so on. They have these other companies who have written a news story-like thing. And basically, it's quite nice. I at least believe that many of these stories that that the advertisers create are much more informational than, say, a display ad. So they might be much more useful for the users. Similarly to influencer marketing, it is just an issue of transparency. So whether the visitors of these news sites actually realized that it's an ad is a question that is asked quite often. And the same discussion has been around influencers. So if you look at these two examples, how they inform you that these are ads, they say from around the web. Well, that's not a very clear way to say that these are ads. Here it says sponsored content. Well, it says that, yes, but then again, you could argue that few people read this blue font. They are focused on the titles, and it looks just a news story very similar to the other news stories. So transparency is, of course, one issue. Some news sites do this better than the others, but it is there. Maybe going back to the influencer marketing bit, get Gymshark haul for Black Friday, showing you blah 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 blah. Again, I'm not sure about the transparency, whether it's entirely clear here that this is sponsored content. So the good practice is to really, emphasize that this is sponsored content or something like that. And this is what is also necessitated by the regulators. Okay. Next, let's move on to the campaign planning. So, what do you need to consider when planning a digital advertising campaign? Here's an illustration of some key issues that you should take into account when creating a digital ad campaign. So first of all, what's the goal of the campaign? Are you trying to reach new customers? Are you trying to sell a product? Are you trying to increase the awareness of the brand, or whatever the goal is? That needs to be one key consideration. Obviously, the budget, how much money you have, which might affect what kind of channels and what kinds of ads you should produce. Then obviously the target audience. Who is it that you want to target? Is this a particular segment you're looking for? Is this for the existing customers? Is this for the new customers? Who are these people? So targeting, obviously, very important and one of the key advantages of digital advertising. Then need to think about the ad type or format, whether it's going to be a search ad, display ad. Is it going to happen in social media? Is it going to be in an application or a website? Whatever it is. And then the ad copy. So, what is the actual content in the advertisement? And if the idea is that the consumers click the ads, then you need to really think about what's the landing page. So, where are you directing this traffic to within your website or wherever you want to direct them, but usually, website. It's generally recommended that you need to have a specific landing page where you want to take your customers. So if it's a specific campaign, there should be like a campaign page within the website, or at least if you are promoting a product, then you take the customer to the page where this product is presented and so on. So obviously depends on the context, but you'd really think about where are you taking this customer so that the advertisement and the landing page create a coherent story. Then, of course, what happens after the landing page? So, this relates to the design of the landing page, but also like what would you like to happen after the people reach the landing page? How do you engage them and direct them further toward the purchase? And finally, you need to think about the metrics, how you're going to measure the performance of your advertisement, what kind of tags you need to include to be able to measure and identify which ads are working and which not. So these are some of the things that you need to take into account, and I'm going to talk about some of those, starting with targeting. So, how can you target ads in the digital media? And I guess the answer is that almost the sky is the limit. So there are many different types of targeting options. And here are just a couple of summaries taken from WordStream. And probably don't want to go into the details, but perhaps this figure on the right-hand side, Facebook ad audience types, perhaps specifies the key targeting types that you can use, which actually resonate very much with Google as well. So what they mean by core here could be also referred to as the basics. So target demographics, similarly to what they present here on the left-hand side, Google segments detailed demographics. So you can target based on gender, based on age, you can target based on location and things like that. They're the very basics. Then here it says interests and behaviors, which resemble the affinity segments and in-market segments in the Google's language. So interest targeting or affinity targeting relates to the idea that you want to target ads based on specific interests that the users have. So you want to, let's say you are a travel agency, so you want to advertise for people who are interested in traveling. Then these behaviors and in-market segments are close equivalents. So you want to advertise for people who have recently been, browsing travel agency sites, or they have been consuming a lot of content related to traveling. So Google, Facebook, they can kind of get these ideas that some people are close to buying. They are probably in the middle of the purchasing process, so they are evaluating products, and these are especially good target groups to consider. Many others, but these are the basics. So the profile information, the demographics, geographics, behaviors, interests. But then you can do also more customized things. So and Facebook picture here, target and retarget customers and leads similar to your data segments. So basically, you can target to internet users who have been browsing your website or mobile app or whatnot, or they have been watching a particular page. So then you can create an ad related to that particular product, things like that. There are also things like customer match. So if you have the permission to use the email addresses of your existing customers and want to do a campaign for the existing customers, you can then match your email account list with the emails in Facebook or on Google, and then you can at least find some of those customers. And similar segments is equivalent. I think in Facebook they call it look-alike audiences. So based on again this email list that you have, they will then target not those customers, but customers who are similar to them. So this might be quite powerful way to expand the reach for some customers some potential customers who are not your customers yet. Yes, lookalike is actually mentioned there. And many more advanced options are available. If you're very interested in all kinds of targeting options, you can read more from these links, or then just, Google, Facebook targeting options, or Google targeting options, or whatever channel you're thinking about. But to summarize, the profile information or demographics, geographics, then the behaviors, interests, and then these more data-based or behavior-based retargeting options. So based on the behavior on your website or app or whatnot. Then, of course, one key consideration these days is the privacy. So digital advertising is a good alternative to, or it gives you great opportunities to target accurately. Then again, you need to be mindful of the intrusiveness of your ads. So, of course, these advertisements might also backfire. Many people don't like these retargeted ads. So, the types of ads where you have been watching a product and then the product starts haunting you wherever you go online, people don't like that. So, you just need to really think how much value some of these targeting options give you and how much you are disturbing and annoying your customers while using these targeting options. So it's just something that you need to be aware of and really think what's reasonable to do. There are these famous cases of Target where Target figured out a teen girl was pregnant before her father did. Many people heard of this story. It's quite famous, but it only sort of gives you the idea like how much data many of these companies have about their customers and how well they can predict certain life events or anything that's going on. And we need to be, of course, just mindful that people don't want to be haunted or they don't want to be tracked. One company that has nowadays especially become sort of privacy first, or let's say promoting privacy quite heavily in their marketing communications, is Apple. And the reason is, I think, quite logical. So for Apple, showing ads is not the major part of their business. And they are providing these devices that are associated with privacy, or your privacy might be violated. So they have done many types of new initiatives how to how their users can ensure that their privacy is ensured. And if you're interested, there is one commercial that Apple is promoting. So definitely, as there's been a lot more talk about these privacy issues and people seem to be a little more worried about the privacy, then Apple has used it as a leverage to now endorse their products as privacy first companies, privacy first products. Then again, there's this other discussion going on that when, let's say, Europe has come up with these GDPRs and all these types of things with good purposes, there are also these discussions that these types of things might benefit the big tech companies to an extent, even though they sort of directly harm their business. So it's more difficult for Facebook or Meta and Google to now target or use all these targeting options that would be theoretically possible. But it also may lead into a situation where it's even more difficult to enter the market because these big tech companies have the resources to sort of go around many of these regulations and figure out ways how to provide value. And then maybe for these smaller players is actually becoming even more difficult to enter this advertising industry. And as we already discussed, it's quite a oligopoly type of an industry. But I don't know what's the correct take on this, but just mentioning that there are lots of different types of discussions regarding the targeting. But the key issue is that now that people are aware of their privacy, or they favor to be private, companies need to be a little bit mindful of what kind of targeting options they use. Then next, I'm going to talk about the ad copy versus landing page. So it's really hard to tell what's a good ad, but again, there are maybe certain guiding principles that you can think of. These are actually very similar to what we discussed about the home page in the web design lecture. So make it clear what are you offering, especially if it's something promotional. So what is it that you are offering? What's the value proposition? You should give a reason for the consumers to click your ad. The call to action, what do you want me to do next? And usually it's click, but you can think about how to communicate this. Here are a couple of examples from the educational sector, and almost all types of As you can see, they pretty much follow this same structure. Some are more creative than others, but more or less. So, offering, what do you offer? In this search ad, we can see that they are offering globally accredited MBA and a range of specialist masters. Here they are. London Business School is offering a specific mastering digital marketing program, unique selling point or value proposition. In this search ad, it's about studying Scotland's vibrant festival city. So they want to emphasize that University of Edinburgh is located in a very vibrant location. And London Business School takes a more substance-related value proposition, sharpen the strategies that build customer loyalty in a dynamic and connected world. The key difference, obviously, between the two is also that this is very, very generic. It's like a university level advertisement on take a look at us and check out what kind of programs we have. Whereas this London Business School is much more targeted. So it's about this one specific program that they offer. What do you want me to do next? University of Edinburgh wants the people to join. And London Business Schools want people to sign up. So, very similar. Basically, they want you to click the ad. Now, let's have a look at the contrast between the ad copy and the landing page. And this is where many people do quite silly mistakes. Like here, although I must say that the ad is quite, generic. It is taking customer to the home page of the University of Edinburgh. It makes a bit sense due to the generality of the ad, but however, the connection between this ad and what I can see on the home page is not quite aligned. So here are some questions to evaluate the match between the ad and the landing page. So you can ask if the ad brings a user to a relevant page. Well, kind of, at least it's University of Edinburgh, but it's not really talking about the same thing. So is there a content offering match? Here it talks about the MBA and special masters. Here it's actually talking about their alumni network, which is a totally different thing. Is there a value proposition match? Where is now the Scotland's vibrant festival city that they mentioned? This doesn't look like a vibrant festival city. And then call to action match. Now I was supposed to join University of Edinburgh, but instead, in the landing page, they want me to learn about their alumni 100, whatever that means, probably top 100 alumni. So quite not that good job. Here, this is in German. I'm not the very professional in German language, but I took this picture because it looks fun. And the Batman is saying to Robin that the campaign was linked, or let's say the campaign directed to the homepage, Startseite. And then Batman says this acronym NSAMCWADLB, which stands for Never start a marketing campaign without a dedicated landing page. So this is a good principle to think, although I don't think that companies very often have a dedicated landing page unless it's something very specific. Often the ads are about products, but at least you need to make sure that if you're promoting a product, you're promoting a program, you're promoting an event, you don't take the customers to the homepage where they need to make the effort to find whatever you were advertising. So that's a waste of money, and you're just annoying the people who happen to click the ad. So take the customer to the relevant page, whether that's a dedicated landing page or not. So here is the other example that is, in my opinion, doing a much better job. So in this London Business School ad, it's taking me to this type of a page. And here, if I review the same questions that I already mentioned in the previous ad, Does the ad bring a user to a relevant page? So clearly, now this was about mastering digital marketing. This is about mastering digital marketing. So it's the exact program page that it's taking me. And when I was looking at this page, it's much longer, but it's really dedicated landing page for this particular program. Is there a content slash offering match? Yes, I think so. Pretty well. It's the same program, using maybe slightly different terms, but clearly the value proposition match here. It says sharpen the strategies that build customer loyalty in a dynamic and connected world. Here it's talking about making an impact in your organization with a unified and coherent cross-channel strategy that secures customer loyalty. Well, at least the customer loyalty is a common theme. So to an extent, yes. And then call to action match, sign up. Well, here it says download brochure, but remember it's a longer page, so there is also option to sign up or register. So keep this in mind whenever you do an ad campaign. It's not just about the ad, but what happens after the ad. Then I want to talk a few words about the metrics. So here are some of the popular advertising metrics. So if you want to sort of measure how well your ads are performing, these are some of the typical metrics that companies use. So one is cost per thousand impressions. So basically it's the total cost of ad impressions. So ad impressions, impression basically means that someone has the opportunity to see the ad. It's served for an individual user. So the total cost of ad impressions divided by number of impressions expressed in thousands. So it's a little bit complex, but I'll show you an example in a bit so it clarifies it. Then click-through rate, especially for search ads, is very critical. So ad clicks divided by ad impressions. So this was one of the quality score factors in Google. So how many people see the ad and then how many people click the ad? What's the ratio between the two? Cost per click of ads. So advertising cost divided by ad clicks. Fair enough. So how much do we have to pay for each click? How much do we have to pay to get one person to click the ad and get directed to the website? Then obviously the more monetary metrics of profits. Total revenue times average contribution margin minus advertising cost. So that already requires a more elaborate measurement scheme and knowledge of what the contribution margin is when you sell a product. And then finally, return on advertising spend, profit slash advertising cost. And all those companies who are capable of calculating return on advertising spend. This is the key metric that this is at the end of the day, how much money did you make with this advertisement? So some of these are simple to calculate, some of these are much more important when it comes to the performance. Here are some of the calculation exercises that you can do, and at least hopefully it clarifies how these metrics are used. So here is an example. So Facebook campaign is associated with the following data: 100,000 impressions, 500 clicks to the website, and advertising cost of 1,000. Calculate CTR, CPM, and CPC. So here's the click-through rate. So we have 500 clicks to the website divided by 100,000 impressions. Easy mathematics, 0.5%. Secondly, CPM. So this is now when it comes back to the cost per thousand impressions. So the total cost was 1,000 euros and it's divided by 100. Why 100? Because it's 100,000 impressions and CPM is expressed in thousands. So instead of 100,000, we use 100. So 1,000 divided by 100 would be 10 euros, which means that 1,000 impressions cost 10 euros. CPC, so cost per click, 1,000 euros divided by 500 clicks. So the total cost again was 1,000 and we received 500 clicks. So each click costs 2 euros. Then the profit and ROAS of the above Facebook campaign, and we can assume that the total revenue is 10,000 and contribution margin is 20%. The contribution margin obviously depends a lot of what kind of products you're selling. So 10,000 multiplied by 0.2, so the 20% minus 1,000, which was the total cost, would return us with 1,000 euros. And then the return on advertising spent, 1,000 euros, so that's the profit, divided by 1,000, which is the total cost of the campaign, is exactly one, which means 100%. So each invested euro returned one extra euro in profit. So it's good to sort of these are simple math, nothing very special about it, but it's good to sort of make some calculation exercises to figure out how do we actually use these numbers, how do we play around with them. Finally, something about the tag management for tracking campaign performance. So, if you really want to know how a specific campaign is performing and you want to compare the performance of different campaigns, then you need to use something called tags. UTM tags, quite commonly. And this is what it looks like. So, you can try this on your own. So, if you click an ad, then you can see the URL where the ad directs you. And quite commonly, you will see the URL address of the page you are directed to. And then after that, you can see these UTM tags. So UTM campaign is a blog post, UTM medium is social, and UTM source is Facebook. So from here we can deduce that the campaign is about a blog, and the medium where a consumer has clicked on this ad, or where he or she has been exposed to the ad, was social medium, and more generally Facebook. And the idea of these tags is that when you are running hundreds of different ads, and then you look at the analytics, if you don't have these tags, then you don't really know which ads were performing and how well. And if you use this elaborate tag management system, then you can compare, let's say, Facebook ads to Instagram ads or TikTok ads, or then you can compare social ads versus search ads, or then you can compare the different things that you are advertising, like which ones are performing well. So then you can make this contrast. If you don't have these tags, then the analytics software doesn't know where this traffic comes from. It doesn't, it has no means to know that it was an advertising campaign unless you have these tags. So this is very crucial from the measurement point of view. And this is probably things that I already said. But yes, here are the key UTM parameters you can use to identify a campaign in analytics and assess its performance. So first of all, the medium and source, from which general medium, social search, display, and source, Facebook, Google, etc., the traffic comes from. So this is actually a lot about how do you want to tag these, but these are the generic categories of UTM tags that you can add. There can be something about the campaign and content, description of campaign or content to differentiate ads from the same source. And if this looks intimidating to you, there are many tools like the one here, the campaign URL builder, where you can just use this form where it asks to fill in the medium source, and then you can just, write social, write Facebook, and then it creates automatically the UTM tag for you that you can then insert with your ad. And whenever the customer clicks the ad, it directs you to a certain page, including these UTM tags, and then you can measure how they are performing. You can take a look at the tool here if you wish. Now, I'm hoping that we met the key learning goals. So after this lecture, students should be able to distinguish and define different digital advertising types. So we talk about the search ads, display ads, affiliate marketing, influencer marketing, native advertising, and whatnot. And then I discuss some of the key issues in planning digital advertising campaigns. So targeting is very crucial, who to target with, and then of course, what is the ad all about? So the ad copy, what's the landing page, where are you directing the people, making sure that the ad and the landing page create a coherent story, and then how you're going to measure all this. So these are at least some of the key issues in planning advertising campaigns, and I hope you enjoyed it. Have a great day, and thanks for watching the video.